We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
It's 12:37. With high pressure over the region today, expect mostly clear skies. A weak cold front will move through the state of Illinois tomorrow, but it's expected to do little more than create some increase in cloud cover. The quiet weather and seasonable temperatures will continue through the weekend and into early next week. High temperatures today will rise into the low to mid-80s throughout the region, with lows tonight falling into the upper 50s to the low 60s. The forecast for East Central Illinois this afternoon, sunny with a high of 85, the wind light, and from the north. Very nice weather for the Sweet Corn Festival that gets underway later today in Urbana. Tonight, mostly clear with a low of 60 and a light north wind. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, the high 88. The wind will be from the north at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly clear with the low in the upper 50s. The wind from the north at 5 to 10 miles per hour. Sunday, sunny with a high of 80 and a north wind from 5 to 10 miles per hour. Sunday night through Monday, partly cloudy. The low Sunday night will be in the upper 50s and the high Monday in the low 80s. Monday night and Tuesday, look for a mostly clear sky. The low Monday night will be in the upper 50s, the high Tuesday in the low 80s. At noon Central Time, temperatures across Illinois and Indiana ranged from the upper 70s to the mid 80s, most locations reporting a sunny or mostly sunny sky. At Rockford and O'Hare, 78 degrees. It was 79 at Bloomington, 81 at Mattoon. Carbondale reported 85 degrees. At South Bend, 77. Lafayette, 78. Indianapolis, 83. Terre Haute, 81. Evansville, 86. Willard Airport reported 80 degrees at the top of the hour. The sky, sunny. The dew point, 60. The relative humidity, 50%. The wind out of the northwest at 8. The barometric pressure, 30.07 and falling. And at 12:39, 82 degrees in Urbana on the campus of the University of Illinois. As Hurricane Irene makes its way up the East Coast, it's expected to be felt on New York's Long Island. Its wrath is expected to be felt. The area is home to 3 million people, and there aren't many bridges to get them to the mainland. One of the places expected to feel the storm is Long Beach. Charles Lane of member station WHSU reports.
Long Beach is a wispy barrier island south of Long Island. There's about 40,000 people here, densely packed in cottages and beachfront high-rises stretching along the Atlantic Ocean. There's only three roads off Long Beach, and officials are asking residents to be ready to leave on short notice.
If it comes down that you're supposed to go, then I'm going to go. I'm not going to be stupid about it. It's not that big a deal.
Dan Quinn lives in a condo just off the boardwalk. He has seen many hurricanes here and says some people will stay no matter what.
It's a fairly large surfing community, and I think they're looking forward to big waves, and, you know, those guys will stick around.
And as if on cue, Matthew Festuca rounds the corner riding a bike, one-handed, while carrying a surfboard.
It's the best time is now with the hurricanes, without a doubt. Big, really steep, really hollow, and really fast and really fun.
Festuca has no plans to leave.
Because I've been through, like, hurricanes before, and I don't know, I'm not too worried about it, and the waves are going to be good.
Long Island has dozens of other barrier islands. Altogether, there's about 200,000 people in places that may need to be evacuated. On some islands, there are no roads, only ferries. Nassau County Executive Ed Mangano says he'll make a decision about mandatory evacuation later today or Saturday. He asked people to not just think of themselves, but also think of the rescue workers having to save people from the storm.
The more people heed our warnings and help themselves following our plans, the easier it will be to evacuate those that don't have the ability to evacuate themselves. The elderly, the sick.
Down the beach at Point Lookout, boat owners are weighing other decisions. either tie their boats down or take them out of the water altogether ahead of Sunday's storm. Bruce Larson is a commercial fisherman. He's opted to pull his boat out because, of all things, the moon.
Thing is, Sunday nights happens to be a new moon. So with the full moon and the new moon, you tend to get a little elevated tides.
Higher seas, plus the expected storm surge, plus the wind. All of this has Larson warily eyeing the docks and bulkheads.
That's really it. I'm not worried about the rains and stuff sinking my boat. I'm worried about the boat beating up on the poles and the pilings and all the stuff that could break loose and that nonsense, you know what I mean?
Taking his boat out of the water gives Larson one less thing to worry about.
I'd rather just worry about my house, you know?
Lots of other people on Long Island are feeling the same way. For NPR News, I'm Charles Lane on Long Island.
In Texas, months of drought and record high temperatures have people praying for rain.
Oh, precious God. Oh, hallelujah. We need rain. I lift the animals, the cattle, the sheep. The goats, oh, hallelujah, the wild animals up to you. The trees are wilting. The Johnson grass is not even growing, Lord.
Barbara Light led that prayer last night outside the courthouse at Llano, Texas. This summer has been the hottest and driest on record in the state. The economic damage is estimated at $5.2 billion and counting. NPR's Wade Goodwin takes us into Texas cattle country.
This is the sound of drought. Many of the cattle at the livestock auction here in Emory in East Texas look pitiful. They're standing in 107-degree heat, that's in the shade, ribs showing and stressed out. It's been like this for the last 9 weeks, no rain. Although these cows were bred for the heat, they weren't bred for this. They look and sound absolutely baked. If this were a normal year, an August cattle auction in Emory would see maybe 100 to 200 head. But because of the drought, there's more than 700 head today. And that's down from the more than 1,000 head being sold here every Tuesday for much of this month. Because the sad truth is, East Texas is starting to run out of stock to sell.
414, 420, 430, 430.
Inside the auction room, buyers in jeans and cowboy hats from Michigan and Wisconsin, Tennessee and Alabama raise their fingers in front of their chests to bid. One cow, one calf, one bull after another, until late into the night, the Lone Star State is emptying itself of its cattle.
We've had that place there in our family for 75 years, I guess, and it's never been without water. It's been without water now since about the 15th of June.
Stanley Austin is a rancher and a commission order buyer, which means he buys livestock for farmers and feed yards. He travels throughout Texas, going to 7 livestock sales each week. Austin says this drought is going to alter these rural economies forever.
It will change. It will change Texas. A lot of these smaller livestock auctions, you know, they may have to close their doors due to the lack of cattle.
Farming and ranching in Texas has become mostly an older man's occupation. One look around the auction room confirms that. This generation gap is going to be a drought effect multiplier.
My neighbor, he's an older gentleman, be in his early 70s. He's been working on his cow herd for probably 50 years. He has 250 mama cows. He's out of water. He sold all of his cows last week. And he told me, he said, you know, I'm 70-something years old, probably just retire.
3.4 million acres have burned in 19,000 fires in Texas over the last 6 months. There is charred land everywhere. Inside the livestock auction cafe, farmer C.W. Bowen is telling everyone how he almost lost his house on Monday. He was off his property when he got a call on his cell.
And my neighbor was screaming into the phone that my house was on fire. I lost my religion and drove like a maniac to get to my house. And found out that some of my neighbors and friends had stopped and fought the fire and saved my house.
It is so dry, the blistering sun magnified through the end of a broken Coke bottle or beer bottle can start a fire. And as sad as the cattle can look, the horses for sale can look even more pathetic. The vast majority are not working horses, they're pets, and there's no place to slaughter a horse anymore. So for $20, $25, $30. Last week, a mare and her foal were just given away at this auction. Watching the long parade of goats, horses, and cattle hour after hour, it's clear that something terrible and perhaps permanent is happening here. Wade Goodwin, NPR News, Dallas.
It is day two at the Canadian Women's Open in Mirabel, Quebec, and the world's top female golfers are battling it out. In the field is a powerful yet little-known player, world number one, Yanyi Tseng of Taiwan. She has been powering and smiling her way around golf courses and, as NPR's Tom Goldman reports, making history.
She's won five major championships, and she's 22. Tiger Woods was 24 when he won his fifth major. Legendary Patty Berg was 25. Berg holds the LPGA record with 15 Grand Slam titles. Yanyi Tseng has won most of her majors just since last year. What, you ask, is going on with this stocky, chatty young phenom who still counts beating her dad at golf?
2000 is the year I beat my father.
As one of her career milestones? What's going on was evident during an unremarkable but telling few minutes I watched at last weekend's LPGA tournament near Portland, Oregon. It was hole number 7 during the second round of the Safeway Classic. Tseng drove her tee shot into the sand of a fairway bunker. From there, she hit into thick rough. The old Yanyi would have walked up to her third shot with slumped shoulders and a sour face. Instead, waiting to hit, she glanced over, saw my son, she met him the day before, grinned, and said hi. Then Tseng hit a beauty of a shot that landed 5 feet from the hole. She sank the putt for par and fist-bumped her caddy. It was a moment that would have made Gary Gilchrist proud. Gilchrist is Sen's coach. They've worked a lot on her reactions to bad shots, how to accept them, move on, stay focused. From his home in Florida, Gilchrist says it's paid off.
You know, when she missed the fairway, she'd make bogey, and then once she changed her attitude and her body language, she started making birdies.
Not that Tseng misses that much. She's a golfing triple threat with accuracy, touch, and power. Her drives average a tour-best 269 yards.
Yanyi Jiayou!
Yanyi Jiayou, in Mandarin, roughly, go Yanyi go. It's a constant cry from the galleries that follow Tseng, and a reminder about her fan base. She's really big in Asia, especially her native Taiwan. On a trip home after she won the British Open last month, Tseng kept getting stopped on the streets. She's a household name there, but not here. It bothers her a bit. Come on, people, five majors. But such is life as a non-American on the U.S.-based LPGA Tour, a tour that has struggled in recent years, losing sponsors and its two best players, Annika Sorenstam and Lorena Ochoa, to retirement. But Yanyi Tseng is doing her part to connect with Americans, with smiles and language.
I talk too much. You know, I don't afraid to talk to people, so I just... We have conversation, and I learn from some vocabulary, some grammar from you, and that's how I learn the English.
A couple of years ago, as the numbers of top Asian players surged on the LPGA Tour, former Commissioner Carolyn Bivens proposed that athletes had to be proficient in English or face suspension. The controversial plan died quickly. Tseng says embracing English isn't part of any directive. Rather, she says learning...